I go when the crescendo starts, Orlando. Anyway, welcome to Subject to Discussion. The
what would that
Christmas
be?
When it does. I don't know. It's the march from Star Trek Generations. In case everybody's wondering, I got a couple emails. What is that? That's from the Star Trek Generations. That was the march before the movie actually started. So the whatever you call it. Anyway, welcome to the show. Merry Christmas, everybody. As Saab was saying, Happy Kwanzaa. You know, Happy Halloween. Whatever. Good luck opening. I gave Orlando a Christmas gift. It was a box of candy. I bought a bunch of those at the store, and nobody came into. It's not intentional. Nobody can figure out how the hell to open those things. So good luck. Don't kill yourself. And anyway, I thought I'd start the show tonight talking about go through the news, and we're gonna have a guest, Joe Gandelman. He's the blogger of the Moderate Voice blog. Joe Fish from the USN DemVet blog had to drop out. He's been busy this week, and actually, if you checked his blog. Today's the first day he's up. He can't get open. Today's the first day he's been able to update since Friday. So I tell him it's no problem. We'll have him back in a few weeks. And, of course, we want to start off with the attack yesterday, the suicide bombing onto the mess tent in Iraq. The explosion, this is from Slobodan Lekic from the Associated Press, an explosion towards a suicide mess tent where U.S. soldiers were eating lunch Tuesday at a military base near the northern city of Mosul, blowing a hole in the ceiling, leaving the floor filtered with trays of food and puddles of blood. And at least 20 people were killed. The number of soldiers killed is varying. There have been some totals of 19 of the dead were American soldiers. And I saw on CNN it was 14. So apparently they're still sorting it out what was what. There's some soldiers. There's some contractors. There's you know, civilians. There's Iraqi soldiers in there. So they're still trying to figure it out. And because according to here, it says that, you know, a military spokesman in Mosul said 14 U.S. troops died in the blast. So they're still, you know, I said, figuring it out over there. And let me see. President Bush was at the Walter Reed Medical Center, you know, visiting the injured troops Christmas week with his wife, Laura. And he said the blast, the explosion, should not derail the elections, that he hoped relatives of those killed know that their loved ones died on a vital mission for peace. And he said he's confident democracy will prevail in Iraq. And let me see. I'm just going to skip through. It's a pretty long story. No, thank you. Oh, it's candy bars. Sorry. I was told it was fudge and those things, but guess not. Before Tuesday, Mosul was the scene of the deadliest single incident for U.S. troops in Iraq. November 15, 2003, the next biggest disaster for American troops was when two Black Hawk helicopters collided over the city, killing 17 soldiers and injuring five. And the crash occurred, of course, as the choppers maneuvered to avoid ground fire. So that was this is the biggest single loss since then. And also staying in Iraq, 66 were killed over the weekend in car bombs in the Iraqi Shiite cities. And this is from Najaf. The twin attacks against holy Iraqi Shiite cities of Najaf and Karbala killed 66 people and wounded over 200. Death toll in Najaf has risen from 48 to 52, a number of wounded from 90 to 145 in the car bombing on Sunday. The car bombing in Karbala killed 14 people and left 57 wounded. So, boy, they're just it's amazing what's going on over there. And President Bush, of course, you know, light bulb went off. He said Iraqi bombers are having an effect. No kidding. In a sobering assessment of the Iraq news, President Bush acknowledged Monday the Americans' resolve has been shaken by grisly scenes of death and destruction. And he pointedly criticized the performance of U.S.-trained Iraqi troops. And he said, quote, no question about it, the bombers are having an effect. It's always good, the president's seeing reality, yeah. U.S. names, and there's an American being held hostage over in Iraq in an appeal for his release. The U.S. Embassy in Baghdad announced the name of an American soldier, or American, excuse me, hostage seized over 6 weeks ago in the Iraqi capital and appealed for his release. A spokesman identified as Roy Hallam, 56 years old, was kidnapped along with a Filipino accountant and a Nepalese and three Iraqis at the office of the Saudi Arabian Trading and Contracting Company in Baghdad's Al Mansour district. So they're taking hostages again, so I don't know what the odds of him coming out of there alive is. And on Monday, President Bush defended Donald Rumsfeld. He was getting bashed over the weekend for the having signed the condolence letters and the automated pens and everything. And, you know, I did get a Christmas card from Donald Rumsfeld, and you know, it was stamped with a rubber stamp, so But I got that, stole that from Jay Leno. And
yeah, I mean,
you okay? All that candy's making you sick.
I wanted how could you justify him having a autograph machine sign the death letters?
I think because there's been so many soldiers killed over
there.
Yeah,
but if you're the leader and it's your department, I mean, as a manager, you got to be responsible, and you have to have some sort of responsibility for the life of these people that you're putting in harm's way. I mean, you're the one putting them in harm's way. I mean, just have a little bit. If they gave the life, you can give the time.
Yeah.
You know, if they died, just take a little. I know it's a lot of them, but just take a little time.
Well, President Bush.
Write it down. You know, do it yourself. Yeah. I know it's a lot of them, but do it yourself, because maybe you start But maybe you think over some of the stuff that you're doing.
Yeah.
When you start writing them, when your hands start hurting.
I know. And he said that on Monday that this is from Ken Guggenheim from the Associated Press. He said that one of these related to Guggenheim Museum, maybe, accused of being insensitive to U.S. soldiers in Iraq and their families. Defense Secretary Donald H. Rumsfeld received a fresh endorsement Monday from President Bush, who called him a caring fellow. I've heard the anguish in his voice and seen his eyes when we talk about the danger in Iraq and the fact that youngsters are over there in harm's way, Bush said at a White House news conference. He had a press conference on Monday. Still, a poll suggests slippage in support for Donald Rumsfeld, and there earth-shattering revelation there. Just over half in the CNN USA Today Gallup poll, 52% said Rumsfeld should resign, and 36% say he should not. So, and he says, my goodness, that's least Chuck Hagel, a senator from Nebraska, about the mechanical signing device he's been using for those for the condolence letters. He says, my goodness, that's the least we could expect from the Secretary of Defense is having some personal attention paid by him. And Rumsfeld said last week he'll personally sign the letters in the future. And, Bush continues, says, I know Secretary Rumsfeld's heart. I know how much he cares for the troops. And he said Rumsfeld and his wife visit hospitalized soldiers all the time to provide comfort and solace. So, I don't know. And it's been revealed, I think, somewhere last night I saw that Rumsfeld's actually real name is Ebenezer Scrooge, I think. They're looking for unveiled his real name. And the Democrats are demanding answers on the lack of Iraq armor. This is from Dateline from Chicago from Saturday, that the incoming deputy leader of the Senate Democrats demand answers Saturday for Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld as to why U.S. soldiers in Iraq and Afghanistan lack protective equipment for themselves and their vehicles. And we can and we should armor every Humvee, every truck our troops use in Iraq and Afghanistan, as Senator Dick Durbin, Democrat from Illinois, said in his party's weekly radio address. And it's still a problem. They have stepped up production of the armor for those Humvees, but hopefully they can solve that soon. And this is something that I haven't seen anybody else talking about. Inside, there's more prisoner abuse being revealed from the Marines over there in Iraq. And, hold on, what's the chat room doing? How come these polls never contact me? What are they talking about? What polls? About Rummy? I don't know. Apparently, you got to be on some kind of list. I don't know if it's the stores. A lot of people say it's these department stores. They're selling, phone numbers. They're selling, things you sign up for. They're selling these lists, and that's how you get out. I don't know, because the only time I've been called is during the election. I got called from Bill Clinton. I got called from Schwarzenegger. I got all the celebrities were calling me up, telling me to go vote. But that's the last time I don't get called for voting, for polling. I just get called for voting. So, and there was a court martial. It's records link killing to sex. Now, this one's been nobody's talking. I've been sure I watched the news last week. Nobody's been talking about this, so I'm breaking this. This is from Saturday. This is from Raleigh, North Carolina. A National Guardsman who plead guilty to killing a 17-year-old Iraqi soldier. He said he shot the young man after they had consensual sex in a guard tower, a newspaper report Saturday, citing court-martial records. Private Federico Daniel Merida, 21, pleaded guilty to murder without premeditation and other charges during a court-martial in Iraq in September. So this thing has been sitting around for a couple months here. I mean, how come we haven't heard from this before? Merida was sentenced September 25th to 25 years in prison and reduced in rank and will be dishonorably discharged. He is being held at the Fort Leavenworth, Kansas, a Leavenworth spokesman said. Army officials at the Ford Operating Base Danger, where the court-martial was held in Iraq, had previously withheld details of the case. However, the News and Observer of Raleigh reported Saturday that the records show Merida, an Iraqi on guard duty May 11th in a tower on the perimeter of an army camp near Tikrit in northern Iraq, at about 10:30 p.m., Morita shot the teen 11 times with his carbine. Morita first told investigators the teen demanded money at gunpoint. Later, he said he killed the boy because he forced him to have sex. In a third interview, Morita said he got angry if the two had consensual sex. So what is it? Morita also pleaded guilty to two counts of giving false statements. Morita apologized to the victim's family during the court-martial. He said he was a son, a brother, someone very important to them, he said. I took someone they loved and cared for. Morita, who was born in Veracruz, Mexico, is a wife and a toddler son. He was a member of the 113th Field Artillery Battalion's Battery B, based in Monroe. Wow, that was amazing. Here's this guy in a tower, having sex with a soldier. So, I think we're being joined by Joe.
Yes, this Joe. Is Joe.
Joe Ganimon, thank you for joining us. Everybody, this is Joe Ganimon. He's real nice to come on at the last minute after Joe Fish had to back out. And Joe Ganimon runs the...
Yes.
Hi, and welcome back.
Thank you.
Yes, he was our very first blog we ever had on the show weeks and weeks ago. I think it's got to be, 14 weeks ago, because we've been doing the show about 18 weeks. So.
Yeah, and but. Despite that, you're still having bloggers on.
Well, no, they've been a really source of news and everything. I mean, it's amazing. I mean, how much, the bloggers, of course, were credit for bringing down Dan Rather and everything.
Right.
And then... And you're all over the place. You're, a regular on Dean's World and everything else. So, but is that the 4 o'clock train?
One second, I can't hear too good. Yeah, what's that again?
Oh, I heard a buzz. I thought maybe that's a 4 o'clock train coming in. But hello, you there?
Yeah.
Okay. And first of all, we got a lot of new listeners who don't know quite who you are. So tell everybody listening a little bit about yourself.
Well, I started my blog. I think the beta run. I sort of tested it. Not even with my name on it, starting about a year ago, Christmas, and then on January 1st, my little logo was on it, and then my name was on it, and I was a journalist for about close to 20 years. I freelanced as like a special correspondent of the Christian Science Monitor over in Madrid, Spain, and I also did some stuff for the Chicago Daily News over in India, and then I worked on two newspapers in the United States, the Wichita Eagle Beacon, and then the San Diego Union Tribune, now it's the Union Tribune. And then I left, believe it or not, in 1990 to do some freelancing, but particularly because I wanted to go into a very lowly form of entertainment, which is ventriloquism.
Mm.
And people say, of course, you worked for dummies, so now they can work for you. So I left the newspaper business and actually went into entertainment, and then by last year I wanted to get back into writing again. I really missed it, and people told me about a blog. I didn't know a thing about what a blog was. But I just decided to try one on Blogspot, and it started with 10 readers, and it's been just steadily going up in the number of hits.
Correct, and you just won an award for the 2004 Webby Awards, Awards, excuse me.
Very fortunate on that one because I won, and I'm still sort of in a modest class because, as I said, it started very small, and it's going up, and it's actually linked quite a lot of the other blogs.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, I think the difference between my blog and a lot of the other ones is that I honestly do not belong to a political party. And so I'm all over the place politically. I've said to friends of mine that to try to turn this into a mass blog, if I'm honest with readers and people, it may be impossible because if I take a stand one time where people, the Democrats get mad at me, another week the Republicans might get mad at me, people on the left get mad, people on the right get mad, and so it sort of goes in waves where I get people, some people get angry and they say, well, how dare you link to so-and-so? And I'll simply say, well, I link to everybody, and I also will... just simply call the shots as I see them. So, as I said, it's been very fortunate that it is actually getting a lot of readership. It's a very loyal people.
Yeah. Now, your ventriloquism. Now, do you have what's your main puppet's name, or what do they call them?
John Raven is the main character. In fact, that website we're redoing the website. If anybody's interested in seeing that website, the old website is www.familyentertainer.com, and then they can go and they'll see. Some of the things that I do there, and also my biography, which explains the whole thing with the journalism. My bio's on there, and if they go to www.joe, this one will be hard to do on.
Is it linked on your The Moderate Voice?
Yeah, The Moderate Voice. It's www.themoderatevoice.com. That's the blog. But then the ventriloquism one is www.familyentertainer.com. Now, if they go to The Moderate Voice, they type in www.joeganelman.com, they'll see the one that's being redesigned. But I perform all over with the ventriloquism, but I miss the writing, and writing was really what I was trained to do, because I did go to journalism school, I did get my master's in it, and I had been a very, you know, real workaholic reporter, both off the newspaper and on the newspaper when I finally got on the staff of the newspaper. Well, that's sort of what I do in the blog.
Yeah, well, and also the Chicago Daily News. I mean, I'm from Chicago. That was Chicago Daily News. I'm from Chicago, and that was one of the major papers.
It was a great newspaper. Those guys are just wonderful. And they would, basically, I was over in India, and I was credentialed by them with the Indian government, and I'd write some fairly long, extensive things for them. And I was filing about, three or four stories a week that they would run over and syndicate on the Chicago Daily News Wire, and then I'd do the really long ones, the long features. So I did a lot of stuff for them, and then when they folded and I went over to Spain, and I got there right before Franco died, and I was in just out of journalism school, when I got over to Spain, then the Christian Science Monitor used me, and they made me what they then called their special correspondent of the Christian Science Monitor, which they defined as a full-time contributor. I was not a staffer. But they didn't send any staff members in, and I was basically in charge of that whole post-Franco story for them, and they gave me some expenses for some travels, which actually in those days turned out to be traveling to the Basque Country. I did a lot of things on the Basque separatist movement and terrorism. So, I mean, when that bombing took place in Spain, I did a bunch of posts on my blog and some other ones about things dealing with the Basque and Spanish terrorism. So, I mean, I sort of lived through a country living in the throes of terrorism when I was in post-Franco Spain.
I read that. Now, how did you start your blog?
What's that?
How did you start the blog? You just went, you know, you said, well...
the blog?
How'd you start it?
Oh, how did I start it? Well, first of all, people listening in, if they're thinking of doing a blog, what I tell people all the time is that, well, you know, if you go to Blogspot, it doesn't cost you a penny. You can start a blog for no money. And do whatever you want to do. Whatever you decide to do is right, because nobody can dictate what you have on that blog. So I wanted to do it. I had a guy who helped me on my computer at that time, and he also designed my website. And I didn't know anything about posting photos. I didn't know a thing about. I'm really not too computer literate. And so he was doing the photos for me, and I did the basic design. And he tinkered with it. He added my logo. He added the blog roll. He insists he wanted me to have very few links on my blog roll, and he felt that I shouldn't take a position, but on the other hand, he wanted me to take positions very much to the right. So we had some very big arguments, and at one point he just simply quit, left my blog. I didn't know how to even fix my blog. I didn't know how to post pictures, even my regular event site. So that was at that point where I got with somebody else here in San Diego who designed websites, Paula Blege. And she redesigned the blog. I moved over to TypePad, and that's where the blog started to take off. Now, you mentioned Dean Esme from Dean's World, who was very nice. Out of the blue, he sent me a letter, an email saying, "We need people like you on the internet because, again, I'm not on the right or the left. I'm all over the place." Mm-hmm. And if people go to my thing, they're going to see. Oh, well, I'll backtrack for a minute. So Dean sent me this thing, and then after he had me fill in as a guest blogger, he asked if I would do that every weekend. So. And he promised me that when I did it, what I decided to write was my own business. And he's never once told me not to post something or to post something. He's just total, whatever I want to post, I just post.
Very good.
I got to also tell you something. The other difference with my blog is that once I went off on my own, so to speak, at TypePad, what I did was on my blog roll is that I like looking at different ideas. I like reading somebody who I disagree with. Mm-hmm. And so if people go to my blog, they're going to see an awful lot of links on the blog roll divided into center voices, right voices, left voices, and other voices. And if they use that, I use that blog roll, these are the ones that I check all the time. Mm. If they go there, they're going to see an awful lot of web blogs from all different viewpoints on that. That alone, I wanted to make like that as a resource for people who felt they wanted more than just one viewpoint when they went to a blog.
Exactly, because I'm all over the place on the blogs.
Yep.
I use yours as my starting point. I'm like, let's go see what he's talking about. And then I go, I pick and choose. I go up and down the list and everything.
Uh-huh.
Now, what issues get the most feedback on your blog? When you post something, what do you think what gets the most feedback? Is it still the election or is it Iraq?
Oh, boy, that's a good question. What issues get the most feedback? Gee, well, I think, I still think the interesting thing is, I mean, I like the offbeat stories. You know, when I was a reporter, I one of my favorite stories was people that jumped into a vat of Jell-O and had to feel underneath for the keys for the Sedgwick County paddy wagon. If they got the keys and going under Jell-O, they got the paddy wagon. But, you know, it is the hard news breaking story. So on my blog, you see a lot of sometimes some offbeat stories that I do for fun.
Mm-hmm.
But the ones that really get the biggest attention seem to be the political stories. If it's something about the Democrats or something about the Republicans.
Yeah, we're still divided, aren't we?
We're still polarized. Yeah. I just put one on about the war in Iraq that is going to probably upset a lot of people because it was responding to a William Sapphire column.
Yeah.
And and then, of course, Instapundit linked me at times. But even when he hasn't linked to me, there have been some ones that people just caught on because I took a hard position on something, either... when they did in the campaign on the Swift Boats thing, my position was, frankly, I don't want to hear about anything about the background, military background of either of these candidates. I was not interested in George Bush's record or the Swift Boats thing for John Kerry.
Exactly. I think that's what we talked about when you were on the first time, that you know, both of them aren't perfect. Both of them had problems with their military record.
And people got really mad at me because of that.
Yeah.
I lost a whole bunch of readers. And then what's the other thing? Oh, well, I mean, it's when I do the political things that I get a lot of big notice. There was one very interesting story this week. Jay Rosen, who has a great blog under my other voices on my website, on my blog, it's Press Think, and he's a journalism professor. He did a thing about a newspaper in Greensboro, North Carolina, that is actually going to be incorporating blogging, I mean officially incorporating it on their website.
Wow.
It's like a major revolutionary thing. And I did a thing based on his piece, one of the longest ones I've done, and even took went and spent hours going through the blogs in Greensboro to get reaction from the bloggers there, and I thought that would get a lot of attention. It didn't get quite as many links as I thought. But the ones that have gotten the big ones, you know, if the political debates, the big political issues, those got some of those enormous number of links on it.
I bet. Now looking at what role do you see the blogs playing in the future? I mean, a lot of them are
saying...
A
little louder. I can't hear you.
Can't hear me? Oh, maybe turn Joe down just a little bit because I get less feedback from him.
You were talking louder before. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Okay,
what role do you see blogs playing in the future? I mean...
Well, you know, there's a whole bunch of things going on now with blogs. Now, if people go to the web... I'm not expecting to get a million people going to... my blog, when I'm on any kind of a talk show, same thing if I'm on television with my characters, which I'm going to be locally to promote an event on Monday. I don't really expect much, but honestly, if they go to the blog and they look for that thing on Greensboro, that's very interesting because that touches on the future. Then you have also, look at what's happening. You have this newspaper incorporating a bit of blogging. Then you have the Washington Post swallowing up Slate.
Oh, I read that. That's interesting. They bought it from Microsoft.
Yep. And now you have also, there's other people pointing to the fact that some other people are starting to just quit blogging. One blog that I really liked was Tom Watson's blog, and I have a little modest blog ad on it. Mm. And he ran a thing basically saying that he was quitting, that he thought blogging was yesterday, and too many bloggers are writing about blogging, which is sort of the kiss of death, and the fact that it's become highly publicized, that it means that it's over with. And there's some people that have gone on hiatus. I think I've removed 4 to 6 blogs from my web roll because people didn't bother doing any more stuff on their blogs. I think some people are going to stop. I think some people are going to give up. I think some people, because of the elections, they felt that they were going to, and it was ridiculous for the people on the right and left to feel this way, their blogs were going to have a major impact. I mean, the Dan Rather thing and some of that other stuff, yes, because that was a massive thing on the part of many blogs, but one person with a blog is not going to change the course of an election, on the right or the left.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that as this past election, with the bloggers going to the conventions, the Dan Rather story, the Swift Boat story, and then those two, the latter of those two were ones, stories that were actually pressed by bloggers on the right, I think that blogs are going to be increasingly read. I'm sure that the readership is, you know, the readership will go up, but also particularly the readership among elites in the media are going to be reading what the bloggers are saying and either, you know, incorporating some blogging, or in some cases probably even co-opting some of what the bloggers say. You know, you want to do an analysis piece, read a zillion blogs and take some of the points you get. It's going to make it a lot easier for people in the media who are writing analysis pieces.
True.
To, you know, get their ideas from things that they see written by bloggers.
Well, the blogs are like at the pulse of what's going on. I mean,
yeah.
You know, they get instantly, you know, what's going on with anything, politics, or you got the Scott Peterson mess, or anything else.
It could be sports. It could be anything. And I think the blog phenomenon is not. I don't think it's over by any stretch of the imagination. I don't think it's declining. I think there will be a shakedown in it. Very definitely, I think there's going to be a shakedown where a certain number of people are going to quit. It depends on why somebody starts a blog. Look, I mean, when I started this thing, I had no illusions, and here's my rule of thumb on my blog. I started with 10 readers a day. I said, if I didn't get, if it looks like it's going down, say, a year from now, and it looks like people are bored, then I'm going to say, you know what, I just shouldn't waste my time on it. As long as there was a readership that stayed the same or that showed some kind of growth, I was interested in it. I had no feeling that if I did this thing that suddenly I was going to be known all over the world and go to a million readers. Part of the thing is that in my own case, I don't belong to a political party. I don't have that built-in support system where a big blog on the left or right is automatically going to link to me because they agree with me, because almost nobody agrees with me on everything, but some of these other big blogs do link to me.
Mm-hmm.
So some people start because of creativity. They start because they think that they're going to make a name for themselves. Some of the really young people that are, there's Teenage Pundit. There's another one that's very good, Young Pundit, which I like very much. I use on my blog role.
Yeah, I've read his a couple times. Teenage Pundit.
I think he's high school.
Yeah, yeah. And Teenage Pundit, I think he's on hiatus because his site's being redesigned.
Have you talked with him?
I've tried to. I tried to get him, but his blog's being redesigned. I don't have his...
It's Young Pundit, which I think I have under Right Voices.
Right Voices.
Teenage Pundit, and he's redesigning his.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, all these people, some of them are doing it because they're interested in getting into journalism, and it is a very good exercise because the more you write, the better you write. It's like reading. The more you read, the better you read.
Exactly.
The more you do anything, the better you get. So there's different reasons why people do it. But if somebody started a blog thinking, gee, I'm going to start this thing and I'm going to get a million readers, or at the end of the year I'm going to have 10,000 people a day visiting my... Well, then they're probably deluding themselves.
True.
Especially if they're not going to have anything new to say.
Yeah. Now, what do you think about this disaster in Iraq with all those soldiers getting killed over there?
Uh-huh.
What's been your reaction for that on your blog?
Well, I did a couple of things on that. Death in Iraq, I did a couple of things on that. One thing I said, I can't remember what I wrote earlier today, but basically I said it's going to make it a lot more difficult because, it's sort of like a pincer movement for the government because you can't – I had somebody just email me because of what I said. One of the things that you can't really say that this thing resembles Vietnam. There's too many things that make it different from Vietnam. On the other hand, one of the things that's similar right now is the fact that you've got people can't figure out now, the military and the people running the war in the country of Iraq, who's on your side and who isn't. Because from the latest, this was an inside job.
Yeah, it was somebody came even strapped with the explosives on him and set it off inside the mess tent.
That's right.
The mess tent.
And because they found the torso of somebody, so they know it was a suicide bomber.
Exactly.
And now the problem is they're going to have to try to figure out a way to get better security to screen the people that are going inside the mess halls or wherever, or just people that are close to the troops that are Iraqis. And then also, once they are working with people like the American soldiers over there, who can you trust? Can you really trust someone? And then I would think also that they're going to have some extra intelligence capability to keep an eye on the Iraqis that are around the Americans to make sure that, there are going to be watched a lot more, so it's going to make things a lot more difficult. Then the second thing is, this administration has so little room for failure because...
What do you mean, so low room?
Look at the polls. He doesn't have the Bush administration doesn't have an awful lot of support on this, and their second term hasn't even started yet.
Exactly. And I said, they have no room. The approval, Rumsfeld's approval ratings down the drain. Bush is getting clobbered. I mean, it's and second of all, what are they doing? Having all those troops eating together at the big mess tent anyway? That's a sitting duck waiting for something to happen. They should have these guys broken up in different groups, smaller groups spread around in this one central area eating.
I just said something on the blog right now that William Sapphire did a column.
I was reading that.
Yeah, and I was reading that, and I got really angry, and I wrote that because again,
it's a long column you put up there. My God, it's a long column. A Sapphire misfire is almost satire. There you go.
Yeah,
I
got really angry because first of all, I got to tell my satire. I like William Sapphire. And I forget some years ago when I was in the paper, I wrote him a letter about how much I liked him and that I didn't always agree with him on everything, but I really thought that he was very independent, and I liked the way he thought and all this. He wrote me a very nice letter, and this has been many years ago. And then I read this thing today, and I know he's going to be retiring soon. I said, what the heck is this? Because what the guy basically says is, I admit I was wrong in a tactical sense. I thought it was going to be over sooner. But, and then he went through all these things, why he supports the war and suggested that people are on a witch hunt or scapegoat, looking for scapegoats, and that seemed a reference to Rumsfeld. Well, Bill, I have news for you. The questions that are being asked about Rumsfeld are being asked by Republicans as well as Democrats.
Hagel, McCain, I mean, they're all starting to ask questions.
And it's not scapegoating, and I'm somebody who supported the war, and even as we talk right now, I don't know where you stand or where anybody, I just basically, my position is that I supported the war, I believed what they were saying, I now feel that I was had, frankly, because every one of the things that I believe turns out to be false. But I'm not saying that they should pull everybody out, because we do have America, there are American interests at stake here, and there are young people there, and it is better if Iraq is left without Saddam. But that doesn't negate the fact that the way this war was either sold on the basis of things that were terribly inaccurate, absolute, scandalously bad intelligence, or outright falsehoods. And I think when history's written on that, that's what's going to be damning to the administration, no matter how it turns out, because the premise of selling it, none of that stuff has turned out. And I said in my column that, you know, Sapphire goes on about suggesting that maybe when the weapons of mass destruction are found, the people who are critical of the war will then admit they were wrong the way he's admitting that maybe he was wrong. Well, I think that's about as likely as O.J. finding Nicole's killer on the greatest golf courses.
Yeah, or Scott Peterson getting acquitted. I mean, you know, if those things were there, they would have found him by now. It's like me,
they would have found it by now.
Exactly. It's like me. I don't like this war, but like Powell said, we broke it. We got to fix it. I mean, we own it now. So, I mean,
that's right.
Our problem no matter what now. So, and now they're batting around. Oh, you know, they said before we'd only be there, the latest we'd be in there in Iraq would be 2006. Now they're pushing it back to 2009. I saw somebody today, they said we should be in there, probably be there for another 20 years.
It's possible. And the thing is, you know, I would think this, it was, I think, a history professor who emailed me about this, and I may turn it into a post, actually, because I just gave an answer about this, because I remember the Vietnam War, and again, I was all over the place on that thing. I actually was one of the students who supported it until the very last minute, and when Nixon invaded Cambodia. And the story I love to tell people is that, now I blasted Robert Novak a lot on my site, but when my university, Colgate University, students were down there demonstrating, now this was the this was actually the rally that John Kerry became famous at as an anti-war Vietnam vet. I didn't know till this year when I saw the old clips that was the kid who I remembered when I was in college. I remember him quite well. I mean, I didn't know him, but I remember on TV. But we went down to the place, my friend of mine from college, we went down, and I think it was like my freshman year, sophomore year, and we went down, and there was Robert Novak in that building, and he came out and talked with us, told us he thought that the demonstration we were doing was totally ridiculous and idiotic, but he was great, and we talked for about 20 minutes, you know? And but I tell people the difference right now between this and Vietnam, there's a bunch of differences, one of which is that we're not dealing with a country, you know, like there was North Vietnam, which had, there was a base for the guerrillas and an infrastructure in that base. Well, these people in Iraq, there's insurgents and then the bin Laden people. But a huge difference as far as the internal politics is there really is no draft. Even though there's the backdoor draft, as people call it, there's no draft.
Individual ready reserve.
On this thing. But if they go to a draft, I think all bets are going to be off.
Do you actually think they're going to head to a draft? I mean,
no.
I don't think so. That'd be suicide
so. I really
for Bush.
I really don't. I think that because Congress would have to approve it, nobody's going to want to vote for that thing. They find anything they can do. I just can't see that happening.
No, neither can I. Now, what do you think? I don't know if you heard the start of the show about that story about that soldier having sex with that 17-year-old Iraqi soldier. Did you read that anywhere?
Which is that again?
Oh, there was a soldier in Iraq who was a court-martialed for having sex with a 17-year-old Iraqi soldier back in September.
Oh, I read
September.
A little bit about that, yeah.
Yeah, but I wonder why it's not being more broadly reported. The only place I saw it was on Yahoo and the...
Probably it's one of these stories, you know, it's like, in other words, it's a story that if the things hadn't happened yesterday,
it probably
would have gotten very big play. But it's like, having worked on the news media, it's, you know, it's like you have to consider the news media is
very.
It's like an attention deficit child
exactly.
is going to go from one thing to another, and whatever. If you get this big thing coming up now, and now there's more. You know, all the calls for Rumsfeld's resignation, and and then the things yesterday. I just think that. That sort of overshadowed. If that had not happened, I think it would have gotten bigger play.
Yeah. Well, Rumsfeld was, was making remarks about that attack on that mess tent, and I almost expect him to start crying there. I thought he was biting his lower lip like Clinton used to do, you know, but not quite.
The question is when Rumsfeld's going to go. I mean, I would think that with all the stuff that's coming out, if I had to make a prediction, I would say right after the Iraqi election, sometime after that, he'll either want to spend more time with his family or say he's moving on to a new challenge.
Yeah.
You know, who knows?
Do you think these Iraqi elections are going to be like a killing field over there when they start lining up to vote? Or do you think they're even going
to
bother?
Hold them. I mean, I don't really know what's going to happen. I mean, it's hard to really tell. I mean, they're going to hold them, and then invariably there'll probably be some people saying they're unfair. It's a question of how many people say they're unfair, and if it's a big massive scandal and people say it's unfair, then I don't think I think there's going to be problems. But if it's just, you know, that if it's just that most people feel that they came out okay and that they are basically fair elections, all right. But I don't think Rumsfeld's going to be around a year from now.
Yeah, or like how we're imposing our will on the election, like allowing. I don't know who that is.
Yeah, because what would happen if they decided they're gonna pick somebody that we don't like?
True. Like with the Afghanistan elections, I mean, we pretty much our guy won. I mean, so same thing's happening in Iraq. Our guy is going to win. And the question is, the Iraqi people are going to view that as the Americans are imposing their will, on our free, quote, free, government or not. So we'll see what happens. Now, what do you think of President Bush being named Person of the Year by Time Magazine?
Well, it was a logical choice. I mean, I was thinking about who else it could be. I know that.
You think it'd be Dan Rather?
Huh?
You think it'd be Dan Rather?
No.
Are the blogs? They were up
Dan
there.
Rather.
The blogs are right up there. They said they're. I was watching. CNN had some program Sunday morning, and they're saying that one of the possible of the year could have been the blogs.
Oh, yeah, it was Powerline was the blog of the year.
Yeah, they're known as overturned
and
that.
And then Wong Kidd has gotten a lot of... She's created some fuss in the blog world because she basically said she thought that the blogs really did it a service because what they did was only cover one aspect of it and didn't get to the point of what were the actual charges true. Mm-hmm. You know, the questions raised about George Bush's record.
Mm-hmm.
So there's been a big fuss over that on the blogs. But I think that it was sort of logical. It would have been... George Bush, because he pulled off the election. It looked like he was going to lose the election. And,
true.
And rightfully, or
the election of our
Renati dominated the politics for the year. So
the election of our lifetime, you mean, right?
Yeah, I mean, and people were saying they're going to move to Canada. Of course, it's interesting when this happens. I don't think Canada's gotten an awful lot of people that have moved.
No.
But there was a lot of that going on. So I'm not at all surprised about that. I think he probably was a logical choice this year.
I agree. I mean, he overcame huge odds. I mean, the Iraq thing was a mess. The economy was in the toilet, and everything else was against him.
I thought it was going to be George Bush and Karl Rove.
Oh, yeah, I thought that too. Well, somebody said, who was it? Dick Morris. He was on Hannity and Combs, one of those shows. I remember one year they said that they want to put Clinton and Dick Morris would be standing on his shoulders, like whispering in his ear or something like that. They want to put the two of them on the cover. I thought, well, maybe they do the same thing with Bush and Karl Rove, but or maybe have that little speaker thing that supposedly he had in his ear in that one debate,
Yep.
And of course, and now the GOP they're starting to get they're wary of President Bush's Social Security plan. What do you think about that? I mean, they say that in 2042 the system will go out, will be bankrupt, but in 2018 the annual benefits will start exceeding revenues.
The jury is still out with me on this thing because the way I'm looking at this thing, I stuck something on the blog from on my blog today from a site called The Glittering Eye. I thought that he had a pretty good collection of links on it, but I mean, what's troubling me on this whole thing is that's right, the Democrats are saying it actually, there's a long way to go before there'd be real problems. Then George Bush and the Republicans are saying, well, it's got to be fixed now. But what I'm really getting a sense is that a lot of Republicans are for fixing it the way George Bush wants to fix it because George Bush is their leader, mm-hmm. and he says that's the way to fix it. And a lot of Democrats are opposed to what Bush is proposing because George Bush is not their leader. You know, I'm getting a sense that there's so much polarization that to take a deep breath and stand back and say, well, what should you do to actually fix it? You know, is it better fixing it? And I mean, I'm getting the sense reading it that it isn't just altruistic on the part of George Bush and the administration that they have a lot of their friends in Wall Street whispering in their ears saying, this would be really good because they'll get a cut of it if these things are put into account.
Yeah.
I mean, that's I'm starting to get very cynical about that, but I'm also getting very cynical about some of the things, the way the Democrats are reacting to it. So I'm probably a little more cautious about doing something on it right now myself. If somebody asks me, I don't think I'm going to be out there beating the drums for the president's plan, but I'm probably not going to be doing a ton of things screaming that you can't do it. Because right now, I'm in the wishy-washy middle on this because I really don't know what to think, except that I'm nobody has sold me on their position on this thing at all so far.
True.
I know it has to be fixed.
True. Well,
and I know that politicians have put off fixing it for years.
Yeah. Well, now, what about they said that if President Bush's plan goes through, it'll add up to anywhere from $1 to $3 trillion to the debt. There's a brainstorm. Why don't we pay down the debt we already have before we add more to it? That makes pretty much sense. Pay what we owe down now, and then fix Social Security if it has to add money to debt to the debt. I mean, that makes too much common sense, or what? Why are we adding more to our debt as
well,
it is?
Well, that's it. And the thing is, the thing about the Bush administration, or at least President Bush, which his supporters think is wonderful, and other people don't think it's that wonderful, is that when he takes a position, takes a stand, that's the way it's going to be. This is what I want, and that's all there is to it.
It's his way or no way.
In Texas, he had a much better reputation as governor, as being somebody who would go for a plan, and then they'd be a compromise. But as president, he's been a lot more, it's my way or the highway. You're going to do it this way. You're going to do it this way. Do it this way, and pretty much stick to it. And now they've got the votes. But if you read what's going on with the Republican Party, I'm wondering if they're going to get the votes on some of these things.
Yeah, it seems like they're having a little civil war over there.
Yeah,
doesn't. I mean, they're all bickering amongst themselves, and a lot of Democrats predicted that hope you enjoy it. They say you're in power. Hope you have fun with it.
It's going to be pretty hard to blame everything on Bill Clinton at this point. When I listened during the campaign to every time there was something would come back to Bill Clinton. Well, now it's that's okay doing that. It's the end of 4 years. Now you're moving into the second term. Well, now you have three branches of the government. You have control over all this. You're the what was once the alternate media, Fox, and some of these other publications, Washington Times. And even the blogs, some of the very powerful and well-read conservative bloggers. Well, now, you are in control. It is your responsibility. That's all there is to it.
Yeah.
And, so it's going to be very easy. Again, I always tell people, make sure you go back and look at history, because presidents' second terms have been awful.
That's right. As I said last week,
those are presidents that started with big poll numbers.
Exactly. Yeah.
He's starting with very, very bad poll numbers.
Yeah, it can only get worse for him.
So it does. It's hard to see what's going to get better the next 4 years, as far as the way that this administration is going to work, because they're starting out with they have political capital, but it's not the political capital that they're making it out to be. In fact, it's a lot weaker than any president who's been returned to power.
True, because every two-termer president, Clinton had his problems with Monica, and then Reagan had the Iran-Contra mess. So every two-term president, it seems like these scandals start brewing up. I mean,
but they all had much better poll numbers.
True.
The thing is that George Bush won the election, but the people who voted against it was not an overwhelming mandate, and the people who voted against him are very much unconvinced at this point. That's what I'm noticing. They are not convinced. So it didn't really. It's like everything's in abeyance right now. The political wars are somewhat in abeyance right now.
Yeah.
But I think it could be a pretty scary 4 years. I think.
Yeah.
Now out here in California, we got Arnold Schwarzenegger with a whole different style of doing things.
Now what about that? Supposedly they're going to try and amend the Constitution so he can run for president. I think that's ridiculous.
I don't think it's going to happen.
Neither do I.
First of all, I don't see why people who are partisan Democrats would want to go along with that, because obviously the point is so that Arnold can run for president. And I voted for Arnold. I was somebody who I voted for Republicans for governor, and I voted for Gray Davis for governor the first time, and I felt really totally disgusted by what I saw in his job performance, and I was one of the people who was very much for a recall. And Arnold is exactly where I am politically. I tell people that if they have it. I put that on my blog, but basically where I am is pretty much, if you look at where he stands on most issues, I'm probably 90% where he is, and I love his political style, which is really a very much of a very bouncy, optimistic type of style. Once in a while he'll be a bit partisan, but and that's where he loses me, if it looks like he's getting overly partisan. But I like his style very much because he appeals to both parties, and it's very optimistic, and he is all over the place politically.
Yeah, he's like, they say he's Reagan.
He has a 60-something percent
approval?
Popularity rating here in California.
They say he's Reagan-esque.
He is. The difference was very much Reagan-esque. He really is very Reagan-esque. I mean, he has, if you can understand his accent, of course, it helps. You know, he is very much Reagan-esque, and he has his tent out in front of his office because they don't allow smoking in buildings in public buildings. So he has a smoking tent where people start creating a stink over that. So he put this big, nice big tent outside. So he invites members of the legislature there, and they smoke their stogies and make their deals out there. But he's previously in our state, the biggest, the most popular politician was Dianne Feinstein, who I will contend, if she had been a man, would have probably have been running for president by now, because she's a very good politician and really very sharp. And she managed to get people from both parties to vote for her. She always gets very large margins, extremely popular. But now Schwarzenegger exceeds her popularity.
Very good. Now, this week they had Mary Beth Cahill was at a Harvard University Kennedy School of Government with Ken Melman. And she said that the part of the reason why Kerry lost was because of the Swift boat ads. They didn't respond fast enough.
Because of what?
The Swift boat ads. She said that part of the reason why Kerry lost is that the Kerry campaign didn't react fast enough to the Swift boat ads.
I think so. In retrospect, the only word I can give you is revolted. Because, to me it's like some kids out in the schoolyard throwing dirt at each other. I just had no respect for the Republicans that were doing the Swift boat ads. I had no respect for the Democrats that were absolutely fixated on George Bush's military record. I could care less about the military records of these two guys. I was interested in policies. And that's just me, and obviously I was not in the majority on that. But I think the Swift boat ads did do something. But again, that was, the Swift boat ads, they did something because John Kerry's, I don't know, whatever possessed him, what pictures Bob Shrum has of him. but he had his campaign manager, Bob Shrum, who has an absolutely hideous election record on national
elections. He's
lost
every presidential election he's been involved with, Bob
Shrum. I could
Shrum.
Not understand what possessed him to hire him, and he ran an absolutely awful campaign. I was a political science major, and I'm a political junkie, and I've read God knows how many books on political campaigns. I read political stories, and that campaign was so atrocious. Up until the Clinton people came in and shook it up and took it over, and then it looked like it got back on track for a while there, but it was too late. But yes, they waited too long. They didn't answer the Swift boat ads. They should have been out there answering it immediately, because the whole lesson of the Michael Dukakis loss and the way with Lee Atwater, the way he ran his campaign, was that you have to respond, which is why James Carville and Paul Begala created that war room with the Clintons. And what did they do? They responded to everything immediately. So the Swift boat ads came out, and they waited, and they waited, and they waited, and they figured nothing's going to happen to it. Well, it went from the blogs, and then as soon as it goes to the blogs, all it takes is one major newspaper to say, hey, there's a controversy here. So then they wrote a story about the blog controversy. Then somebody else wanted to see if they could top that one, another news organization, and then it takes on a rhythm and a life of its own. I've done whole posts on the whole rhythm of a news story. People want to top a story, and they want to top that story, and top a story, and what's the new angle on this story? Then, when it totally runs out of steam and you can't do any more, then it ends.
Yeah.
But so they let it totally get out of control. Absolutely huge mistake.
Who do you think is going to be running the DNC?
What's that?
Who do you think is going to take over the Democratic Party?
What?
Excitement, Howard Dean, or who do you think is going to be running that party? Because now the party...
Who do I think will run it now?
Yeah, because...
Terry McAuliffe's... I think it would be a mistake. I mean, I've read his statements, which sound a bit more moderate than you would think. But, I mean, look, the man has a reputation... perception is half the problem. He's perceived as a far-left candidate of the Democratic Party. If they make him the person who's speaking for the Democratic Party... doesn't matter what he says, there's all this stuff that's going to be thrown at him. He's the image that's out there. They'll be rerunning the Scream thing. He should not be the one who's speaking for the Democratic Party. If they want to get somebody, they need a new face or somebody who can at least appear to be more of a moderate Democrat. But they can't have somebody out there that can be easily defined and demonized, because they will be demonized.
True.
I mean, Howard Dean would be a godsend to Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity.
They'd love it. And Karl Rove would just love it, too.
Oh, they'd love it. They'd love it. Yeah. Just think of the fundraising letters that they could send out and millions of dollars they could make off of Howard Dean, being the person in charge of the Democratic Party. So, I mean, they've got to, But you mentioned also the thing again about the Swift boat ads. I think they should have responded sooner. And it really... But I was also amazed during the campaign the people on both sides that just were absolutely, absolutely obsessed with this thing on the military records.
Yeah.
On both sides.
Well, they beat that to death. Well, I saw something where actually Fox News Channel turned down a couple of the Swift Boat ads because they thought they were too negative.
Right.
Of all the channels, they're the only ones that turned down two of those ads because they thought at the time they were too negative. And then apparently once everybody else started running, they joined in, you know, and they said...
Well, there is in journalism and entertainment, we have this pack mentality in this country where, gee, if somebody's doing it, we all have to do it.
True.
You know, it's like if you look at blogs, there's a certain blog speak. One blogger will use a certain expression, then you see a zillion bloggers are imitating the same thing.
True.
You know,
true.
As opposed to people just writing the way they would normally write.
Yeah.
It's like that. So is it there? And then somebody covers something, everybody feels they have to cover it, and that's what happens with newspapers and magazines. And so news stories take on a life of their own. And now that you've got the cable channels, the 24-hour cable channels, and now on top of that, you got blogs that go faster than the cable channels.
There you go. True. And you got all kinds of talk radio, and you got
and talk radio. So you got this monster, this stuff, and it's all looking for new material, all looking for a new twist. Mm-hmm. And they see somebody else that's getting interest and getting attention, so they want the same thing.
Yeah. And plus Fox, a lot of those shows, you know, they didn't run the commercials, but they showed that ad a lot during their programs. You know, mm-hmm. Hannity Combs and Bill O'Reilly. I mean, O'Reilly ran it over and over and over again, you know, because he's trying to get Kerry onto his show. And, you know, it seems like every night he was showing an ad and some kind of a story based on that ad. You know, and he brought on the guy that ran the Swift Boat Vets who debated Kerry on the Merv Griffin show.
I need to
show.
Also mention to you and I don't know, I haven't been able to confirm this, but you know, one thing that was very interesting is that, and I think it stopped recently, but there was a for a while there, man, during the campaign, there was I was getting stuff. I must have been like 30 or 40 email messages a day from one supposed reader, and they're all anti-Kerry things, and I'm convinced it was somebody on the GOP side that was assigned to my blog.
Ah,
you know, to feed me with material.
Yeah.
And then once there was after a debate, there was a message I got from this person that went to me, Fox News, Bill O'Reilly, let's see, a couple of other conservative talk shows that said, we have to get the word out that we won the debate because we're losing the debate. It was like instructions almost. And I saw it on Pandagon. They got a hold of that thing and posted it. Oh. And then I did a post because my email address is on that too.
Very good.
And I, you know, and but I was getting just inundated with things from that person. It stopped, I think, the past 2 weeks.
Wow. Joe, we're almost out of time. You want to say a special word to any of the listeners out there? Or, you know, what do you have, a Christmas greeting or Hanukkah?
Oh, definitely. Well, I can't say happy holidays because people say that I'm anti-Christmas. So Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, Happy Hanukkah.
Mm.
I'll say Happy Kwanzaa, and people hate me for that, too.
There you go.
But happy holidays. And then if anybody, just tell any of the listeners out there, if you're not doing blogging, remember you can start it for it won't cost you a penny to start it up, and you can try it for a while. It's a very, very good hobby. It's a good way of expressing yourself, and you'll meet a lot of good friends.
There you go. Joe, thank you very much.
All righty.
Thank you. Have a good holiday. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
That was Joe Ganneman at themoderatevoice.com, one of the premier blogs on the net. So and there's the band is struck up. So where's Bing Crosby? I may request. I'm dreaming of a white Christmas, just like the. I won't get a contract, I don't think, will I? I'll be American Idol.
Recording contracts are being sent over to LVRocks.com right now. Just send us over.
All the computers just crashed.
We sing polka, and we're good.
Thank you for joining me on Subject to Discussion. You guys, everybody have a good, merry Christmas. Drive safely. Don't drink and drive. And we'll see you Sunday and Tap Out. Good night.
And you turn yourself around. That's what it's all about.
Right on.
You put your right arm in, you put your right arm out. You put your right arm in, and then you shake it all about.
Left arm.
You put your left arm in, you put your left arm out. You put your left arm in, and then you shake it all about.
You do the hokey pokey and you turn it all around. That's what it's all about.
You put your right elbow in, you put your right elbow out. You put your right elbow in and you shake it all about.
You do the hokey pokey and you turn yourself around. That's what it's all about.
You put your left elbow in, you put your left elbow out. You put your left elbow in and then you shake it all about. You put your head in, you put your head out. You put your head in and you shake it all about.
You do the hokey pokey and you turn yourself around. That's what it's all about.
Right hip.
You put your right hip in, you put your right hip out. You put your right hip in and then you shake it all about.
You do the hokey pokey and you turn yourself around. That's what it's all about.
You put your left hip in, you put your left hip out. You put your left hip in and you shake it all about.
Whole self.
You put your whole self in, you put your whole self out. You put your whole self in and you shake it all about.
You do the hokey pokey and you turn yourself around. That's what it's all about.
You put your backside in, you put your backside out. You put your backside in and you shake it all about.
You do the hokey pokey and you turn yourself around. That's what it's all about.
Hokey pokey.
You do the hokey pokey.